Hello and welcome to The Huddle, brought to you by Wilson, au.wilson.com for all your sporting needs, the official ball of the NBL. Welcome back. We've had a little bit of a hiatus. It's been just the NBL schedule has been unbelievable in recent times, but The Huddle is back. And I got my man Peter Hawley on. The NBL Awards finalists were announced earlier today, and Hools and I have jumped on to break it down. We look at the three finalists for each of the major awards. We break down all NBL first and second team, how we think that should go, and who's been snubbed, who is maybe fair to feel a little disgruntled for not making these lists. So a big NBL Awards emergency huddle pod. Sit back, relax. Up next, Peter Hawley. All right, Peter Hawley, welcome to The Huddle, man. Thanks for coming along.
Mate, been a long time coming. I'm glad I finally got the nod. I've been sitting on the pine waving a towel for a while, but here I am.
Actually, the show's been sitting on the pine for a little while. It's been busy, and it's good to be back in action. What's going on? What's the latest with you, man? Because there's always something going on. We get to the pregame for the broadcast of the games, and I just wait for what's the latest story. You had your number plates whipped off your car the other day. You're in a fight with the telecommunications company. What's going on?
No, yeah, well, that was last week. It was the third night of lockdown here, and we finished the game, and it wasn't even one of the late Perth games, and got outside and got about 500 metres down the road, and Heverin pulled up next to me at the lights and said, "Your number plates are gone." And I thought he was joking, and then got home and both my number plates had been snatched while we were calling the game. So got all that fixed the next day, and now just moved house, and Telstra promises the internet would be ready to roll. And of course it's not. Why would they get that right? And now can't even figure it out. They said that I can't call them. I've got to do it on online chat, and they reply every 30 minutes.
Okay,
but here we are.
So you're not happy. When Jack Heverin pulled up alongside you and said your number plates are gone, did you pull over and just do a sneaky check?
No, I was like, mate. I was like, all right, cool. He goes, I'm serious. I was like, Jack, good one. Like, it's hilarious. And I was about 10 minutes from home, and I got home, and I was like, oh, he's right. He said the back plate. I was like, oh, he's right. And I ran around the front, and I was like, oh, they've got both of them. So haven't got my fines yet. I'm sure they've gone and done some damage in the. Before I could report it to the police. So, and they're not even custom. It's not like I've got a hooly dooly on the back or anything. It's just regular plates.
Not only are you driving around the streets during lockdown, but you're driving around without plates on, which makes things extra difficult. This is an emergency huddle pod because the finalists for the NBL end of season awards dropped this afternoon. And we got to break it down because a couple of little surprises. Couple that we sort of have gone the way that we expected, but we've got a top three for each of the awards. We're going to go through it. We're going to rip it apart and get a real feel for things ahead of the awards night coming up.
Sounds good.
Where do you want to start? Let's leave MVP and coach of the year for last. Yep. Let's leave those two for last. Go ahead, pick wherever you want to start from there.
Let's start. We'll go rookie of the year. That's probably the easiest one, isn't it?
So Josh Giddey, Dejan Vasiljevic, and Justinian Jessup received the three most votes. Every rookie was nominated, essentially, was eligible. And that means not a DP. So Mason Peatling couldn't get a look in this year, which is kind of crazy. His next year, he's going to be eligible for rookie of the year. Does this take you by surprise? Vasiljevic, 21 games only, and he gets top three votes.
Kind of, but then you look around, I'm trying to think of who else. Only because I think of Yanni Wetsu, I thought might have been someone who comes into the top three. I think he's someone to be very unlucky to miss out of that. Vasiljevic was awesome. We thought before he got hurt that he was probably going to get rookie of the year. We thought he was a lock, actually, before he got hurt, and that's before Josh Giddey had his triple doubles. But yeah, I think that he's probably one of the biggest snubs in that. Jack White was going to be up there as well if he didn't get hurt. But yeah, I guess it speaks how highly he was playing and how important he was to the Kings before he got hurt.
Do you put on the captain's hat? You're the captain of the Illawarra Hawks. All right. And this awards voting sheet arrives in your inbox, and you've got to sit there and you look at all the nominees for Rookie of the Year, and you've got to vote 3-2-1. Would Yanni Wetzel have got a vote from you?
Yeah, for sure. I think he's been great for the Phoenix, and he's just been a model of consistency. I mean, every single night he gets out there, he's not flashy, but he just goes about his business. Then he has games where he has 18 and 11, and you're like, oh, wow, he's playing really well. And you go back, and his quiet games are still about 12 and 7 and just goes about his business. I think he would have been, for sure, with the injuries to those main two and Jack White and Vasiljevic, he would have got the nod.
I think he would have wound up getting two votes from me,
yeah,
to be honest. Giddy, of course, is going to win. We know that. We were confident of that. And like you say, Dejan Vasiljevic was leading that race at the point when he went down because he was sensational. Giddy hadn't gone on his triple-double streak at that point. That was about to get very, very interesting. But 21 games, I don't feel like that's enough when you've got a guy like Wetzel who's been the starting center for a finals team all season long. I would have gone Giddy, Wetzel, Jessup.
Well, it would have been enough in a normal season. 21 out of 28, it would have been fine. I would have felt then, hang on, maybe he's got a chance to win this because Josh Giddy missed a few games at the end too. But yeah, in a season where we have 36 total games, I don't think it's enough because I thought Jack White was doing not as well numbers-wise, but what his part of Melbourne United was huge. I would have thought he was the most important piece for the Melbourne United at that time before he got hurt. So yeah, I would have had Yanni Wetzel in there for sure.
Wetzel is the one out of all of those. Now, Giddy's off to the NBA draft. Jessup's on a 2 years Next Stars deal. So we wait to see how that's going to play out with the Golden State Warriors and the like. Vasiljevic on a long-term deal with the Kings. Wetzel's coming out of contract.
Goodness me. Poor Tommy. Tommy's going to have to open the wallet. There's a few guys who have put their hands up for needing to be re-signed. He'd be a great signature. Just love. I mean, we saw it in his first year. He's only going to get better from there. And we nearly didn't get to see it when he opted out. We were going to lose him. Wouldn't got to see him firsthand. But he's going to have a massive career. And if you're the Phoenix, you want to try and lock him away because, as you said, coming out of contract, I'll be a phone call coming from his home team. You'd think they'd try and say, hey, you know, you want to come back home and really try and thrive back here for the Breakers?
He's going to be hot property for sure. I mean, they had the opportunity to sign him in advance of this season. He was training over there and, you know, I think he would have been open to that, but they didn't get that done. And then, of course, I think that there was probably a moment of the league being unsure about whether Yanni Wetzel was going to be eligible for this award, to be honest, because he went inside that deal in Germany, right, played some a little bit of preseason, one or two games maybe, and then came back. I think he's a definite snub, but we both agree that Giddy's going to get that award.
Well, yeah, you talk about potentially not being eligible. I don't know where you stand on the John Mooney should be eligible, but that would have shaken things up a lot, wouldn't it?
This needs to be the final year
where
a guy like him is not eligible. I think push has come to shove in that regard. If you're a first-year pro, you can win Rookie of the Year.
It's just got to be, we get the import thing, keep it that. But as you said, if you're straight out of school or first-year pro, if this is your first professional contract, you're eligible no matter who you are.
Well, the question for me, I don't think that's a question anymore. That's got to get done. Some people feel differently. Our producer, Guy Neville, clearly does. But what I wonder is what happens with these DPs, these guys that are signing through long-term deals, first-year DP, but they're rolling out playing massive minutes. Mason Peatling is the starting power forward on the championship favorites right now. Has essentially played his rookie pro year, but he's not eligible. Now, you can't just say that DPs are eligible because then you look at a guy like at the very end of a bench, Archie Woodhill, and you say, well, that was your year of eligibility. Well, that's a bit tough. I think that rule needs a little bit of tinkering as well. Andrew Gaze had the suggestion in the green room the other night. Say you're eligible every year you're a DP, plus until you win it, plus your first year of a full contract. So he's saying Peatling was eligible this year. If he doesn't win it, he's still eligible next year. What's your take on that?
I like that. It's a bit like the AFL Rising Stars. It's not the first year, it's, you're right, you can be the multiple years. With Matt Rao would have won and then got hurt. So it's kind of, I like that idea of if Mason Peatley won this year, then it is done. But you give him a chance to go, or unless if you want to go really tricky, it has to be some sort of average minute thing, wouldn't it? Of like, well, if you average over a certain amount of minutes, then that is your rookie year essentially for this award. Because you can't have total minutes, because obviously some teams might just blow it out and all of a sudden you get DPs playing 8 minutes in one game and just building that up. So I think that's another way you could do it. But I like, Gazy's rarely wrong, so we'll side with him on this one.
maybe a little bit of tinkering required there. Let's go to sixth man of the year. The finalists are Joe Lawalachul, Kyle Adnam, and Scotty Hobson. I want to go to this because I feel like the deserving winner of this award is not on the podium.
Oh, I wanted to go start with most improved because I was going to have a reason for why who my sixth man is the final four. But no, we can go with that. Who would you? I, sixth man of the year, I'm leaning now after seeing, I'm going to go Lawalachul.
As in, you think he's going to win it or that's who deserves it?
Both. I think he's been outstanding in his role coming off the bench for United as. He's the scorer, and he came out and said that in the post game interviews. He's like, I go out there and think no one can stop me, and that's the way I'm playing.
Well, he's almost right.
Yeah, he is.
He's one of the toughest covers in the league.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I love when I spoke to him on the SEN, and he was saying, yeah, he said, I do all my individual workouts with the guards. He said, I don't do it. I think he's got his post move down pat, take a dribble and rise up, no one can block it. And he just wants to get his handle better and use that kind of length that he has in a unique way.
I'm just picturing that at Melbourne United practice where Vico says, all right, Biggs down this end, little rest down that end, and JLA just follows Shaili and Macca and goes that way.
If when they play one-on-one, we got to ask, if they play one-on-one, which they often do, he can't post up because that would be unfair. It's just, you can't block him. It might be the back in the old thing when you're doing horse and you tell one of the athletes, you can't dunk in this. It's unfair. And it can't be, because a lot of the time, I remember when we were doing individuals with Vickerman, you said a lot of one dribble from the three, you got to create your own shot. Well, the problem is, while Chul's one dribble from the three, he's dunking it.
He's on the rim. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's been awesome.
I love what he's done.
He's been awesome, man. And when you look at six man, I think one of the things you got to look at is like, guys that have an impact, come out there and have an impact on winning, right? Like there's a lot of guys that come off the bench, play a role. I think Kyle Adnam has been sensational in that regard this year. I think he probably had his, murkied the waters a little bit because his best period of time was when he moved into that starting role and he had the huge game against the Wildcats at the State Basketball Center. Wasn't quite able to hit the game winner, but was huge that night. He had the double digit assist night. He was huge in that period of time. I've got no problem with him being right in the mix. Scotty Hobson, I think, is the best player coming.
Yeah, no doubt.
Right now, and his last month has been incredible. If he'd been performing like that the whole year, he'd be the runaway winner. And with these three now being the finalists, I think Joe Lawalachul will win and should win. But Ben Moore would have got maximum votes for me.
Yep.
He's averaging double figures at an incredibly high percentage in scoring, third in the league in offensive rebounding. Third in the league in offensive rebounding, which I think is huge. Three a game, 60% from the field. Talk about a guy who's coming in and having an impact on winning. I think he's been doing that enormously for Southeast Melbourne. And he, for me, is the biggest snub of all of these awards finalists that are been announced today.
Well, I've got another one that will come up. But yeah, he was definitely, when I was thinking about who could contest for it. And I asked you about Kyle Adnam, we all thought he was going to run away with it when he was starting and playing. If he had started in this back end of the period, if you move that starting period to the back, does he probably win it with that recency bias that people can't help but feel? I know he would be starting, but everyone's like, wow, Kyle Adnam, he's balling out right now. Keeper Sykes has been, if he was hurt now, all of a sudden Adnam is really in the forefront of people's minds when it comes to doing those votes, and he might even run away with it in that case.
It's interesting because I would assume Ben Moore is probably fourth in the voting here, which means Melbourne United and Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, the two Melbourne teams, top four spots in this voting. And it speaks to the depth of those teams. You look at the teams that are going to be in the finals. It's those two plus Perth and Illawarra. And the question mark on Perth and Illawarra really is their lack of depth, right? Their top level talent of Tyler Harvey and Bryce Cotton, John Mooney. That's right up there, the top echelon of the league. But that they don't have that depth of productivity, whereas those two teams have. And I think they're gonna that element of these two teams is gonna have a big impact in the finals.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, when push comes to shove, big players make big plays in the postseason, and you know both of those teams have that. But they're going to I was watching that game against New Zealand the other night with Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I thought their first quarter was terrific, and in my mind, I was thinking if they're going to grind New Zealand out of this game, because that once they start making rotations, it's Ben Moore and Kyle Adnam and Isaiah Liafa, the group that they have coming off the bench, Melbourne United, very similar. So it's no surprise to see them dominating the six-man voting.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think that's going to be – I mean, that's the key always is when it gets to finals games, does every team have the depth? And we always talk about who's the X factor. Well, I think both of those X factors for both Melbourne teams are the bench in general. That's exactly it, because any one of them can step up and do it on both teams. Kyle Adnam can be the guy. Ben Moore can be the guy. It was Ryan Brokoff for a while with Cam Glidden, but with Cam Glidden in there. So it'll be interesting to see how that brings up.
You mentioned Cam Glidden. Quick little aside, and it's relevant to Kyle Adnam here as well. My understanding is that the Phoenix are going to find it difficult to get Cam Glidden back into the lineup in any way, shape or form during these semifinals.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, he came back to Victoria and for the birth of his child, which congratulations to him and the family. But a lot of states have those restrictions in. So it's going to be, how does he get out and do all that? So there's going to be a big question mark. He's been a huge part of what they've done. You take him out. We know Ryan Brokoff's more than capable to step in, but wow, it's definitely changes their team dynamic.
Big time, big time. So my understanding is that the Phoenix and the league are still trying to work through that and trying to find a way to get him involved, depending on how it all plays out. But they got their work cut out for the... So Kyle Adnam's going to need a... Kyle Adnam, Ryan Brokoff in particular, in the absence of Cam Glidden, are going to need to be huge. You wanted to talk about most improved. Let's do it. Delaney, Jordan Hunter, Sam Frohling. Let's park the Hunter and Frohling conversation momentarily, because we knew those two were going to be the top two vote getters. And I still feel like we feel the same way. Finn Delaney is the man who's made it onto the podium ahead of the other nominees. Is that where your first thoughts go with
it
this
is.
Award?
I'm not mad about it, though, but I was expecting Joe Lualatrill. I thought he was going to be someone who would definitely be close to nearly winning it. A couple of others I thought around the league have been really good as of late. Craig Moller's been awesome for the Kings. There's other guys who have really taken these steps forward. As you said, Frohling and Hunter, I thought it was always going to come down to those two. But Finn Delaney, it's kind of the Dave Barlow nomination we saw. Was it 2018? When I saw him in United, someone told me Dave Barlow's retiring next year. And I was like, oh, okay. I've never met the guy. And all of a sudden he came out, had a career year. And it might have been the following year. And I was like, this guy's got plenty left in him. He is a flat-out gun. And then got nominated for Most Improved. And a few people were like, hang on, this guy's been around the world. He's played for Australia. How are we giving him the Most Improved nod? But he went from where he went a couple of seasons in a row to what he produced. And Finn Delaney, I mean, he was already good last year. Ended last season so good that I was so excited for what he'd do this year. Doing the same again. I'm not mad about it at all that he's made the final three. I did expect Lualatrill though. So I would have had, if anything was going to have four ties, I would have had this in there. Because I thought Lualatrill could have been a smoky, because most awards come from the team that's going to be sitting up the top, and the Melbourne United has been that strong.
True. Let me circle back to that Finn Delaney conversation in a moment. Here were the nominees for the Most Improved Player. I got my hands on the nominees.
Oh,
just quietly.
Of course you do.
The panel of so-called experts: Andrew Gaze, Casey Frank, Greg Davis, Joe Healy, John Casey, Lockie Reed, Matt Logan, myself, cast their votes, and then the nominees went out to the coaches, assistant coaches, and captains. And that's how we've arrived at this top three. But the nominees for Most Improved were Craig Moller, Finn Delaney, Jordan Hunter, Joe Lualatrill, Kyle Adnam, Nathan Sobey, who's a very interesting nominee because he's already won most improved player in earlier in his career. Sunday Dech, Sam Froling, Sam McDaniel, Tyrell Harrison, and Tom Vidanovich. Now, the reason why I think this is highly relevant is because our man John Casey went on the broadcast with us, with myself and Drewy and Jack the other day, and was furious that the Jack McVay's name wasn't a part of the nominees as he had heard. And now he was right. He wasn't there. And he came strong. And as I was sitting there and I was listening to him, and I was thinking, boy, he's coming. These are impressive numbers. And so I went and had a bit of, he said, minutes are up 1/3. His minutes have gone up from 14 to 19. Points up 100%. You just spread a little mayo on that. He's gone from 6 to 9. Rebounds up 100%. Yes, 1.6 to 3.3. Said assists have gone up 100%. Well, not exactly. 0.6 to 1, which is not a massive increase in production. Yes, his three-point percentage increase, and he doubled his free throw attempts. Well, he didn't. He went from 0.9 to 1.3. He improved Jack McVay this year. He told me in the preseason that he said he already had his most improved player acceptance speech written. He's going to need to keep that up his sleeve. Do you feel like he was a snub from the initial nominees?
Yeah, from the initial nominees, yes. I think you look at a couple of others there, I think he should have been on there over that. But the thing with Jack McVay, I think we all kept saying, is needed more opportunity. And that, I think that's where we all fell to, was why is he not playing? And that was the narrative around Jack McVay, was why is he not getting more minutes? Like, he comes in, produces, gets his job done. We're all like, he needs to be on the floor. And that just took away from when he came on the floor that he was producing. And that was the entire thing. And a lot of awards do have the narrative around him. But I really thought that was the biggest takeaway from Jack McVay's season, was, man, this guy needs to play a lot more for the Sixers, the way they were playing. Yeah, definitely, you look at the list, a couple of those guys, I think he could have happily been slotted in over. And it's going to be, we know Case is a big McVay guy, and understandably so. When you're there, he's the energy guy. He always makes a smile talking to him and when he plays. It's just fun to watch your guy go out there and play with that, shooting one leg of threes with confidence. But the most disappointing part of it was the fact that we just kept harping on, why is he not on the floor?
If Connor Henry's going to be the coach again in Adelaide, like we suspect that he's going to be, having signed a multi-year deal, should Jack McVay find a new situation? He's coming out of contract here.
Yeah, for sure. Because I understand what he's trying to do. Even if you're comfortable, you say, well, I'm going to stay around and prove to Connor Henry that you've got to play me. But in the back of his mind, you've got to be thinking, oh, did I do that this year? I mean, I did pretty well. And I think in the limited time that we saw him at stages, other teams in the league are like, well, hang on, we can use that guy. We can use him a lot better than that. So if he wanted to test the waters and go out there, I think there'd be a couple of teams like, man, like, we love what you're going to do. And like, you might be behind so-and-so, but you're going to be behind a guy that we're going to need that energy off the bench. We can utilize that a lot better than you utilize this year.
I think an interesting example of that is, I think there's two names as well that probably could have had an argument to get on that nominees list, Mitch Norton and Jordan Nartai.
Yep. And Jordan Nartai, that's a massive one. I didn't even...
Yeah.
I had him as a smoky.
Well, there you go. Because I think he's an interesting example of that, because under Dan Shamir really appreciated what he brought at the defensive end. In key moments in games, he would put him out there and he'd say, guard John Robertson for us for a few minutes. And if you can lock him down, I'll keep you out there. But he had a really short leash on him at the offensive end, whereas Mike Kelly took that off and he really excelled and showed it that he can be a guy that can tick the scoreboard over and give you an offensive punch. And he could have stayed there and tried to re-up in New Zealand and then, and continued to try and prove to Dan Shamir that I can be that guy. But he went and sought greener pastures, and I think that's paid off for it.
It has. And I think it was after that last season that I was actually walking down Chapel Street after dinner and I ran into him as he was getting a burger. And I was speaking to him about that. And I said, like, what's the plan? He said he just wants an opportunity. And ended up going to Cairns. And that's why I thought he was going to get that opportunity. And he did. There was injuries and everything, and Cairns struggled. But I thought he was incredible. I think 100% he should have been on that nominee list.
Yeah, well, he wasn't there. Jack McVay just quite. He's got some, and I'm talking, and I'm sure he'll tune in. And he's got some work to do at the defensive end.
Yeah,
you know, well, and we know that he can score for for sure. But Connor Henry, that team needed to play defense. Every team needs to play defense, and to guarantee that he's going to get minutes anywhere across the league, he needs to take a bit of a leap in that regard.
Well, it's going to be in the weight room then too, because he's going to play at the four, isn't he, when he comes in there, and teams are going to try and post him up and go at him. But I like it's Jack McVay's mindset. He's like, well, if you're going to score on me, I'm either going to score three on you, or I'm definitely going to score two on you. So yeah, where
that's
going
not
to break
going to cut it, though. That's not going to cut it.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? Like, with good coaches that are trying to get wins, that'll get it done in the South Australian Premier League, where he's going to be
put up big numbers.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. But you're coming in and trying to earn minutes in the NBL, that's not going to work. But back on Finn Delaney, Cam Luke made a really great point on NBL Overtime, which we shot just earlier. The great thing about the Delaney getting a bunch of most improved player votes here is that it's people are voting for a guy who's taken a leap from being really good to being like a star. Like he's the star right now of the New Zealand Breakers, and a guy that has gone from being a good player to an all NBL level guy. Like Nathan Sobey has taken the leap this year from being an all NBL second team guy, two-time member of that group, to an all NBL first team lock, an absolute superstar of the league. And sometimes it's hard for people to celebrate those leaps. There's a bunch of different, like Jordan Hunter's gone from zero to this. Sam Froling's gone from a little bit of a higher base to where he's got to. Guys are all starting their years in different positions. And then you go back to those guys like Dave Barlow. Alex Loughton was the other guy that year who was also in that kind of mix. But it's cool to recognize a guy like Delaney who's taken that kind of leap.
No, you're right. I love everything about Finn Delaney's game, and I just had a feeling he was going to have this kind of breakout season. So I love that he's getting that respect shown in those kind of awards. Don't know if he'll win it, but again, if he did, I would not be mad about it at all. I think he's been outstanding. And again, I'm with you. I love the fact that we don't just look at young guys and be like, okay, maybe it's a second year or third year and he's gone. What we expect from young guys to come in who are going to have an impact, if you get more opportunity, you're going to deliver. He's been having this opportunity, but he's just gone from, as you said, just a really good player to a star. I think he's a genuine star leading that Breakers outfit. Mm.
All right, so let's talk about Jordan Hunter versus Sam Froling. How we think this vote is going to go? Let me try to put some numbers around it real quick. When you talk about, because both of them are second year pros. As I said, Jordan Hunter last year started from a much lower base coming into this season because he barely played last year. Here's the jump that he's made statistically. Just waiting for...
I actually think this is the one of those, if between those two, that we can't look at those stats and numbers.
Talk to me.
Because of the increased opportunity, Jordan Hunter was barely played the year before. It was third string, just got sprinkled around. Ends up starting. Mind you, he has earned that and he's worked his way into earning that spot. But it's going to be, as a starting five, starting center, you're going to get that opportunity to go and deliver. And he has. I think this is the one that, obviously, his numbers are going to go up because of that. But again...
But how else can you assess it if you don't look at where they were last year to where they are this year? Because you can't... This is not a vote on who's the better player.
No. Well, it's... Might have been the fact that, okay, Jordan Hunter can do this last year. He would have done this, but he's behind Bogues. So Bogues is going to be playing all these minutes. So he's not going to be needed as much, but he can do this. So we might not have actually seen what we're seeing this year that Jordan Hunter could have given us last year. Well, we did see Sam Froling. But again, Sam Froling got given the keys, as Gorge said. So I'm putting him in as a starting four. We're going to back him. We're not going to get any import over him. And he's going to deliver, and he did.
We can't take that into account though, right? Like what we think Jordan Hunter would have done last year if Bogut hadn't been, like, we didn't see it. We can only go by what's been out there on the floor, right?
And so give us the numbers, because people do say though, well, Jordan Hunter didn't play, so of course he's going to make more.
But then you look at a situation where you go, well, he didn't play, he's because he wasn't worthy of playing. I don't know. It's very difficult. Jordan Hunter's gone from 2.6 minutes a game to 20.8. 2 minutes to 20 minutes, right? So he's gone from a guy that can't get on the floor to being the starting center of a team that finished on the playoff bubble. He's gone from 1 point a game to 9, 1 rebound a game to 6, basically no blocks to averaging 1 a game. And he's done his scoring at 57% from the field, 73% from the free throw line. He's been an important piece to the Kings. Casper Ware, Jarrell Martin, Dejan Vasiljevic prior to that, Didi Luzard. These guys were all better, more important, kind of the keys to this team. Jordan Hunter been really important. Adam Form would often talk about him as being a barometer, though, saying, look, if Jordy brings it, if Jordy's locked in and ready to execute our coverages on the pick and roll, and he's ready to rim protect for us, have those big games where he sends shots away, if his hands are working tonight and he's catching and finishing on those plays at the rim, we're in this game. If the other Jordy shows up, it's going to be difficult. So that consistency, I think, for him is a big element. What's your overall read on his season and his growth?
I loved it. The exact same as you, though. You could see which way the Kings were kind of going to play the entire game on how Jordan Hunter started the game. He's that guy that he's energy, contests every single shot, no matter what happens, doesn't care about that, and goes up and tries to dunk everything with his athleticism. I just love the character of the way he plays. I think that's something that's been really pleasing to watch is just coming in, getting that opportunity and saying, all right, well, I've got to come in. And look at the bigs he has to go against. He's going against Jock Landau's. He's going against the John Mooney's. And he's going up there and he's, I've got nothing to lose. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to play super hard. I'm going to try and play my style of game. And I love that he was that kind of barometer around the Sydney Kings' success.
Xavier Cook's coming out of contract. Jarrell Martin, of course, coming out of contract. The Kings have a club option on Jordan Hunter's deal, which you would imagine that they would take up. I would suspect that they're going to look to extend him right now as well and try to get that done. But if they can bring back Jarrell Martin and or Xavier Cooks, then Jordan Hunter, you're happy to roll him out as your starting center because you've got that strength around him in that regard. If they can't, If Xavier Cooks goes elsewhere and Jarrell Martin says, I'm cashing in on this year and going somewhere else, do they look at that and go, okay, in recruiting the next part of our front line, we've already got our starting center? Or do you look at Jordan Hunter going, he's a long-term backup in this position?
If we're going back to three imports, that's the thing, isn't it? Because you're going to need that piece. And the problem is, places around the league, the most common thing we see is a point guard import, a wing and a center. That's the most common thing we see. We don't really see the power forward import we have with Jarrell Martin. So I think that's something they'd have to look at is if some teams load up with some legit centers, well, he can't be left on the back foot with that. Even though Jordan Hunter will be able to compete against them, he's going to go hard against them. Is he going to give the same as what a big import center, a fringe NBA guy that someone's looking at?
Yeah.
So, yeah, Xavier Cooks is going to be the key of that. And I love Jarrell Martin. I wish he was healthy the whole year. The dude's a superstar. So if they can get those two done, then it does change exactly what they will need to go for.
The other way of looking at that, however, is to go, all right, well, other teams are going to load up at that center position. Jordy can hold his own. So while other teams are zigging, we can zag. So if it's Jarrell, great. We roll those two out. If it's not Jarrell, let's still look at a four. Let's look at a Jarrell Martin, a Vic Law, these types of guys, and try to bring someone else and keep Jordy growing in that position. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. Here's Sam Frohling's leap. He went from 12 and a half minutes a game to 28. Went from 6 points a game to 11, 3.5 rebounds a game to 7. So he doubled his rebounding, almost doubled his points production. More efficient from the field, over 50%. Struggled a little bit from the free throw line this year. Assists 1.5 a game. Blocks, he's blocking over a shot a game. And the thing for me that puts Sam Frohling over the edge is that he's the Hawks' second most important player?
You took my notes straight off the page. That's all I was going to say. It's Tyler Harvey, and then it's Sam Frohling. And that's exactly how it is. If those two are playing well, I mean, a lot of it's Tyler Harvey, but we thought at the start when we saw Justinian and Jessup, we're like, if Jessup and Harvey don't play well, the Hawks aren't going to win. And then once Jessup was being a little inconsistent, we're like, hang on, it's Frohling. If Frohling and Tyler Harvey aren't leading from the front, they're in trouble, the Hawks. He is literally, and Gorge just said that, how important he's been for them. And he's taken that on as he's taken that star role for the Hawks from a team that where they were to where they finished up in the final. He's been a big part of that. And another one that the game, the Kings versus Hawks, seeing him and Hunter go at it was elite. That's what we want to see, is those two young guys, front runners for the most improved player award, both trying to prove exactly why. And they both had plays within a 2-minute stretch where we're like, okay, that's the most improved player. And then the other one did it again. And we're like, oh, maybe that's the one.
And that's a huge leap for Sam Frohling to have taken this year. And we thought he would, you know, because we know he's got a whole bunch of potential and he's going to revel in that environment that Brian Goodgen creates. But heading into the season, and the same applies to Jordan Hunter for sure. We thought that they were going to start Jarrell Martin and Xavier Cooks at the 5 and the 4, and Hunter was going to continue to play backup minutes. And he has become the starting center for that team. But the same thing for Sam Frohling, because people were umming and ahhing. I was saying, like, I think he's going to start. He's going to start for this team. And, you know, but no one was certain about that. Well, what's it going to look like with Cambest, though? And who else are they going to be able to bring in? So to go from there to being the second most important player on a team that's going to compete in the finals is an enormous leap. And he has such massive upside even from here. Like, what kind of player he can grow into and become is, I think, really, really exciting.
I put so much weight on really any awards with winning. So that's something that when I first went to college, my college coach said, if you want to be both successful on a team, but in your future, in whatever role you do, you've got to be part of winning teams. People want winners. Like, I don't care if you're winning at your role, that's going to help you get to where you want to get in life. So I put so much weight on every award in winning. I don't necessarily hone in on the personal stats, because anyone can go out there and just care about their own. But if your team sucks, then who's going to really want you at that highest level? You've got to do whatever you can to contribute. He has done that. And the fact that they're in finals and where they've come from is the big reason why I think he just gets the nod. And if we're going to have a tie, I don't mind. All right, this is one where I'm happy to get a tie.
The defensive player of the year, the inaugural Damian Martin trophy. Here with the nominees: Isaac Humphries, interestingly enough, because he didn't play a lot of games. Justin Simon, Mitch McCarron, which I was happy to see. Mitch Norton, Sunday Dech, and your man Tom Abercrombie. I got Udeh Bubba Shayuli, and maybe even Kiefer Sykes as well as snubs from that initial nominee list. And here we are with the three finalists, the top three vote getters: Justin Simon, Mitch Norton, and Tom Abercrombie.
Not mad about it at all. I was big on the Tom Abercrombie wagon for a long time. Then he got hurt, and I think that just really put the cue in the rack. I don't think he's going to win it because of that. But I love the step. I mean, we know he can do it, but he really looked like he just locked in. It's like, we've got this talent. I'm going to be a defensive stopper. And when you got one of the purest scorers in the league, and Chris Goldie coming out saying that he's the toughest guy he's got to play against one-on-one in games because of his length. He doesn't get screened often. And when you think you've been beat, he just pops back up with his long arms and his athleticism, which is why I was like, Tom Abercrombie will be defensive player of the year. Being hurt, I don't think he'll get it. So I'm big on Mitch Norton. I think Mitch Norton is just picked up perfectly where Damo left off. And spoke to Damo on SEN last night about it. And he's like, I don't want to sound biased, but he said, I think it's Mitch Norton. He said he loves Justin Simon. He loves Sunday Dech. But he said, you have to beat Mitch Norton twice if you're playing against him. He said, if you get past him, it's not over, because he's going to pop back up in front of you. He's either going to try and take a charge, or he's going to be so vertical that you've got to alter your shot. So there's one move to get past him and then another move to score on him. It just makes him so hard to score against. I think Mitch Norton should run away with this, even though Justin Simon's been great towards the stretch. I just think Mitch Norton, they finished second. I just love what he's done consistently every game. I mean, he held Castle Ware to 1 of 11 and was just an absolute nuisance in that game.
What I love about Mitch Norton is he's a fundamentally sound defender. Yep. And you combine that with the effort and energy he brings at that end of the floor. He's not a highlight reel defender. You know, I mean, there were years past. I mean, Sean Long, for goodness sake, got a nomination for Defensive Player of the Year. And that should never have happened. But he's blocked a lot of shots. And it was a highlight, like, real thing. JP Tokoto got a nomination for Defensive Player of the Year. Mm. It was an absolute barroom door defensive player. The Perth Wildcats, right? Demetrius Conga, people thought, this guy's a good defender. No, he gets beat, and then every now and then he recovers and blocks a shot off the backboard, and everyone thinks he's a lockdown guy. Mitch Norton does, you have to be watching closely to see the impact that he has. And then you look, and then you look at the box score after the game, and Casper Ware went 1 for 11. And you know, elite point guards game after game after game just find life really, really difficult against the Wildcats. And Norton is that the major reason why.
And even like the box score of some elite guards, they might go 5 of 19 and still get some free throws or whatever and have 20 points. But you look back at every single possession, you look at how hard they had to work, and they probably lost because of it. And it's because of Mitch Norton. And you said the highlight plays. Justin Simon is a highlight player, but he's actually a really good defender as well. He's hard to score on.
Correct.
The way he reads the ball from being off the ball, the way he reads the game is incredible, which is they're two completely different defenders in the way they go about their business. Justin Simon pops up with deflections. He gets steals. He gets blocks as well. But he reads the game so well off the ball, whereas Mitch Norton one-on-one is so hard to score against.
The six nominees that were sent out to the coaches and captains to vote on, five of them were my five that I voted for. I didn't have Isaac Humphreys in there. I had Simon, McCarron, Norton, Ditch, and Abercrombie. Humphreys probably would have won the thing if he'd have played the full load of minutes, because he was such a great rim protector. But combined with, I thought he took a big leap in his ability to guard pick and rolls. This year was a huge question mark over the Adelaide 36ers coming into the season, and he answered that in a big way. But what I want to give a shout out to Mitch McCarron, who didn't make the finalists. But what I love about McCarron and why I didn't hesitate to vote for him, this year he was not used by Dean Vickerman as their primary stopper. When they came up against Perth, against Bryce Cotton, or they came up against Brisbane, Nathan Sobey, or they came up against Southeast Melbourne with Kiefer Sykes, they're using Sam McDaniel, Shay Ely, and Uday Bubba as that lockdown guy. And sometimes if you're not that lockdown guy, you can go underappreciated as a defender. But Mitch McCarron is he just puts out so many fires. Possession after possession for Melbourne United at the defensive end. Top three in the league in steals, because he makes those reads off the balls and he gets his hands on it when he digs in. He's just an awesome defender. And I'm glad to have seen him get some appreciation for that in this nominees list.
No doubt. And that's the thing. You look at it and so many of that guard contingent for United could have ended up in the top five. Votes. I mean, Uday Bubba has been awesome. Shay Ely, we know what Shay Ely does, and he does the same. Sam McDaniel has been a very good defender at Melbourne United, but the problem is they do it as just a whole unit of guards. They work so well together when they're on the floor together. That bench unit of Bubba and Ely work well together. McCarron and McDaniel work well together. That it's just, if there was, I mean, they're the best defensive team of the league, what we've seen, and it's because they work well as a cohort. It's going to be hard to really hone in on that one person from them.
Let's talk, before we talk Coach of the Year and MVP, let's talk about All-NBL first and second team.
Yep.
Not a part of the announcement at all today. Couple of little tidbits before we start, right? We know it's two inside, three outside for each of the teams. Mitch Creek and Finn Delaney, both categorized as inside players when the voting sheet went out to the coaches and captains. Okay, that's worth flagging. I think we both have probably the same All-NBL first team. Cotton, Sobey, Harvey, Landale, Mooney.
Yeah, unless some coach or captain wants to be tricky, and that's how it should be. That's how we should end up getting first team.
How could that, what is the only possibility in which that could change?
There shouldn't. If there was going to be something, you'd probably looking at, well, we spoke about winning teams help. So like Mitch McCarron is someone who's now, the last couple of weeks, it's been really, everyone's talking away. Mitch McCarron's had a phenomenal season. They finished first. They got the minor premiership. He's the main reason for it. That might put a little bit more weight over a Tyler Harvey that we've seen, but Tyler Harvey's done the same. Nathan Sobey with the Bullets have been falling away a little bit. It'd be a crime. It'd be an absolute crime for those five not to be there. But Mitch McCarron could sneak in with a couple of votes.
I also think the finalists for MVP, which are Cotton, Harvey and Sobey, probably gives us a huge clue to how the voting's gone for the outside players.
Yeah.
All NBL first team.
It should be. I mean, those three have been outstanding. So I think that's on every single person's All NBL first team list. And if it's not, you're probably biased to your team a little too much.
All NBL second team gets way more interesting.
Very.
Mitch McCarron's a lock.
Yep.
Is anyone else a lock from there?
Daniel Johnson.
You've got him a lock? Because I see some people going Creek and Delaney.
Yeah, see, that's the big one. I've got Finn Delaney in mind. I've got Delaney and Johnson, who I think will get the nods on that. Creek, as we talk about the inside, outside. Finn Delaney, that's the way he plays. Finn Delaney plays in the power forward for the Breakers. So Creek does swing between both. I think just Finn Delaney, I can't be more highly of what he said. And I actually just want to be right in one of my preseason predictions, which is why I'd love to see him in there. I'm wrong on everything else. Still hoping for a Breakers Cairns grand final series that I called. Don't know if we'll get it. Still, I expect the unexpected. Yeah, it's Finn Delaney and Daniel Johnson. Daniel Johnson and we've built up and shown everybody how underappreciated he's been all the time, that he's going to get a few nods on that. But if it is Creek and Delaney again, I think that would be well deserved.
Daniel Johnson's the discussion about his underappreciation has, I think, almost brought him to become properly rated.
Yeah.
Bill Simmons always talk about underrated, overrated, properly rated. I think there's been so much flagging of the Daniel Johnson underappreciation that I think he's now at a level where he's properly appreciated. I have him there as All-NBL second team. Two of Johnson, Creek, Delaney, and Jarrell Martin, who probably also deserves to be in this conversation. Two of those guys are going to miss out.
Jarrell Martin, yeah. If he didn't get hurt, and it took him a little while to get that consistency once he was healthy again. When he came onto the scene, we were just like, he's in. This guy's All-NBL caliber. He's unguardable. He's got every way to score in his game. Definitely, you're right, should be around that mark. Then it gets interesting, doesn't it, with a couple of guard spots.
So I go with McCarron, Ware, and Chris Golding. And Josh Giddey is my primary snub as an outside guy. Where do you fall?
I'm McCarron, Giddey, and Golding. And I've got Casper and Ty Webster as a couple of sneaky opportunities to get in. I think, again, I put so much emphasis on the winning that I look at. I think Josh Giddey will get in there because what he did on a personal level. And when the Sixers were winning, Josh Giddey was doing a lot to do that. So you can't really look at how their season fell apart afterwards. Once they got out of finals, it was going to be hard. When they were at full strength, and we talk about completely different tangent here, but if they were going with Giddey, Paul, Sunday Dech or Tony Crocker, Humphreys and Johnson from the start of the season, we would most likely be talking about them in finals contention. They would be well and truly there with that kind of lineup. Josh Giddey is that one anomaly that I think has been outstanding. I think he will get a few nods there. And then I put Golding in over a Casper or Ty because he's a game breaker and he's a part of a winning team and he leads that team from the front in what he does. So again, fair few cases you could have for either way, but that's where I was leaning towards.
I think Casper Ware is such an interesting case right now because talk about over, under, or properly rated. He's within the NBL Twitter sphere and fandom. He's underrated now for some reason. You know, because he underperformed in the grand final series last year. Yep. Because his field goal percentage has dipped away a little bit in his time in the purple and gold. He's gone from being properly rated, where he was, everybody understood that he was the best two-way player in the league a few years back when he was at Melbourne United and winning, leading them to a championship alongside Chris Golding. to being underrated now, where he's chastised. Now, I don't think, this is why I think, well, as well, I put him in, and it's why I think he'll probably get in the end. I don't think he's underappreciated within the playing, the players and the coaches of the NBL.
Yep.
They appreciate how tough he is, how good a defender he is. Yes, Bryce Cotton has torched him, but few others have. And this is a guy who had a 40-point game, averaged 18.5 points per game this year. I think Giddy was great when he was great. He went through, he had some growing pains as well. The turnover counts got up pretty high throughout at different times. I mean, I've got him right at the bubble, but I think for some reason, I feel like Casper Ware's got to a point where he's underappreciated.
We're too harsh as both fans and some media of looking at those, the negative narrative of, yeah, okay, the 1-11 game and everyone won from 11 and say, oh, Cass was terrible in that game. Like, absolutely terrible. Instead of saying Mitch Norton was phenomenal in that game on Casper Ware. And Stars are going to have those kind of games where the defense just steps up in different moments, in different games. And, yeah, I think we're too harsh on that negative narrative rather than looking at certain aspects. And then when he does have a 40-point game, everyone's like, all right, well, that's what we expect from Casper. That's fine. Whereas, hang on, that's tough to do. Like, you don't just do that by luck. Like, that's because you can flat out play. I think we are too harsh on throwing and getting caught up in that narrative of, yeah, okay, he's no good this year. I mean, yeah, there's been inconsistencies, but a lot of players we talk about have been on both ends of the inconsistency, where is it good and bad? It's just some of his are so far between, where he is, sometimes a really bad game and sometimes he has 40. And a lot of the time, okay, he's got 28 to 35. If he's got 10 to 11 or 10, 12, where like Casper had a poor game.
Yeah. Yeah. I said 18.5. It's actually 17.7 points per game. He finishes up 8th in the league in scoring, 40% from the field, which is the same percentage that Bryce Cotton shot this season. 30% from three, which is, Bryce Cotton shot 31.9, and he averaged 4.4 assists, and his team finished just outside the finals.
The assist is something that I love for what Casper's done. I mean, he has had his shooting struggles for longer than I'm sure he would have liked, but getting others involved, and he's had to do that. And once Vasiljevic got hurt, he had to adjust the way he played. Everyone did with the Kings, but it really, he struggled in a little period of those, weirdly enough, growing pains of, okay, my role's changed. When Vasiljevic was there, it was Casper and DJ Show, and they were rolling. All of a sudden, he got hurt. They had a couple of different pieces come in. They were rolling a pretty much all power forward lineup with Casper Ware for the last couple of weeks. That we're looking at that recency bias of that, of saying he struggled. Like, let's go back to the NBL Cup around that time when those two were going at it. And we were like, yeah, Vasiljevic is balling. He's probably their main guy. But Casper was doing his thing just as well, just right next to him. I think it's been tough when Vasiljevic went down that he had to change his role.
Ty Webster's an interesting name to mention as well. 17-5. Way more efficient from three, 38%. Way less efficient from the free throw line, as we know, is the Burger King. Yeah, I think he's probably going to end up just missing out as well.
Yeah, I think you're right there. But again, I think he's had a really good year. It's those teams that when you get those sheets as a coach, as a captain, you're looking around teams and you're thinking, oh, who am I? Who's going to vote for? You've got the list. And you're like, oh, wait. Breakers had a couple of guys who really stood out the whole year. I mean, Findlayney now, but you look at the rest of them. Ty Webster's the other one. Everyone else, Corey Webster's been in and out. He had the injuries. Colin Martin's had some big games, but it was Ty and Finn. So I think that could help him get a couple of cheeky votes.
Coach of the year. We've got coach of the year and MVP to finish up. Gorgian, Vickerman and Gleeson end up being the top three. I imagine when most of this voting was done over the last week or so, they were the top three teams in the league. but you can't argue against any of those guys. Dean Vickerman, a lot of people will say, well, Humpty Dumpty could have coached that team to a regular season title, but that is so not true. We've seen teams over the years that are unbelievable on paper. It's a different challenge coaching a mega talented team like that. but it's a challenge nonetheless. And he's done a terrific job of, I mean, they're just in a perfect place right now, and you've got to tip your hat to him in that regard. I think Simon Mitchell is unfairly chastised as well. Yes, they've been a little inconsistent, but this is an expansion team who's made the finals in their second year of existence. And I honestly, that just doesn't happen. I can't think of another, but there's been some merge teams like the Southeast Melbourne Magic that have done it in their, you know, over that time. The Sydney Kings, was that an expansion team? That's maybe you could have a conversation about that. That's a pretty incredible achievement, and he's led the way in terms of getting there. And a lot of times people talk about Coach of the Year saying, well, we look at it from expectations at the start of the year to where they are now. I got my hand up as pretty much the only person who picked this team as a finals team in the preseason. most people didn't think that they were going to be in the finals, and yet here we are, and they're probably going to finish third. Do you feel like he belongs in this top three, or it's appropriate that he's not in there?
No, I don't think he can I don't think he can take over those three. That's the only issue. I think, again, everything you said is spot on. And we've got to look at it deeper than just, okay, team that finished first or second. What he's done, I think 100% you're accurate with that. But the three that are there, Dean Vickerman, as you said, Humpty Dumpty could coach this team. We've seen plenty of times a lot of talent on teams doesn't win. And you've got to get each player to buy into that. And that comes with not just telling him what to do, they have to excel in that. And that's, Dean Vickerman always said, he builds the culture. When he took over United, he wanted to change the culture and did that successfully. But it's all about what happens away from the court in terms of who you are as a person to bring that onto the floor. Now, Scotty Hobson had his growing pains in his role trying to get out there, and now look at him, where he's got to playing. Mm-hmm. Jock Landau came in, and we talked about Jock Landau going to the NBA, and he does as well. He's got the right mindset, but he's bought into that because of the culture that Dean Vickerman has created at Melbourne United for, we've got all this talent. That starting five they rolled out against the Sixers in the last game.
Mm.
Could have beat a couple of teams around the league.
Well, I mean, they've won that game, right?
You talk about that starting, that strength of that starting. Australia Lee started numerous games in the year. Dave Barlow, Luala Chul, Scotty Hobson, Sam McDaniel.
Killer.
And that's everybody has just bought into that. People are playing, happy to play between 20 and 25 minutes. We have questioned Dean Vickerman's rotations a lot. That's in that one thing we have questioned of how he goes about that. But in the end, I think they're winning. And where they're at now, does that change in the finals? I'm still, my coach of the year is Trev. I think he's missed out a couple of times in the past where we should have given it to him. I'm not saying that's the reason he deserves it, but if that was the reason we give it to him, good, because he should have got one recently.
Yeah.
But just because we had the Wildcats, or I had the Wildcats on the bubble at the start of the year, they had no Tarico White.
On the bubble, but out.
I was like, they're going to play really well, a couple of teams. But again, I didn't expect Cairns and New Zealand to do this to me. So that really hurt my prediction. But it's been outstanding, man, what they've done. And yeah, you've got Bryce Cotton. That's a luxury you have. I mean, that's why you look at Dean Vickerman. It's always got a talented team. Yeah, but Trev's got the best player in the league who's taken another step forward. But I can't get over what Trev Gleeson has done with these young guys. And the young guys I'm talking about, Luke Travers, Jared Bairstow, even Corey Sherbill to an extent. Luke Travers was starting at power forward the year, barely played Leash. And I talk about every time we call the games, but now has grown into one of the most confident young dudes we've seen go out there after all those setbacks that Trev's dealt with him throughout the year.
Yeah.
Trev has just, we've all been like, what's going on? We haven't seen Luke Travers. Jared Bairstow's been in and out when they signed Will Magnay. Little do we know that Trev was just, he had the puppet strings. He's like, mate, I know what I'm doing here. I'm doing it perfectly, getting ready. And honestly, Luke Travers is one of the most exciting players that I get to watch in call games. I love what he's done, and it's credit to how Trevor's done that. He's done that with every young guy. Bairstow went out when Magne came in, and then with Bryce's injury, Bairstow came back in, and all of a sudden, you're like, wow, he hasn't missed a beat either. Corey Sherwell hadn't played for a month, came in, hit two massive threes like he hadn't missed a game.
Yeah.
So it's insane. The way he gets that whole culture is incredible.
I also would vote for Trevor Gleeson if I had the opportunity. But the fact that Brian Gorgian has done what he's done this year and isn't going to win and would suspect probably not going to win is incredible. And I've got to say, we have really high-level coaching in this league.
Mm.
People love to throw slings and arrows at the coaches in our league, but the level of coaching that takes place in the NBL is so highly respected around the world. And, yeah. and when people who really know the game talk about the NBL, they talk about the talent, they talk about how well it's run these days and the excellent job that that Larry and his team have done in picking up the league. They talk about Andrew Gaze, but they also talk about that. So that is a really well-coached league, man. I mean, and teams love to watch our teams, the stuff they run, what they do at both ends of the floor and scout it and incorporate it into their team. So which is why this is such a hotly contested race. And the other thing, talk about Dean Vickerman's rotations. It's so easy for us to criticize. And I did it the other night. I'm saying Chris Golden should still be out on the floor. He finally hit a couple of shots here. And after going, struggling a little bit, like you should keep, but what we don't have to deal with are the emotions and the mental and emotional state of all the other guys on the team who, yep. if Chris stays out there, they don't get their run. And what his job is to do is not to let a guy get a certain number of points or do what we think he should do. His job is to get his team in the best place to go ahead and win a championship. And he's done that. I mean, right now with where they're sitting, he's done that beautifully.
Yeah. No, yeah, you're right. Yeah, you're spot on. It's easy for us to sit back and be those couch guys and be like, no, why is he not playing? He just hit 3-3s. But you're right, there's so much more that goes into it, and that might all change in finals. So we're not sure what we're going to see, but we're looking forward to that.
MVP, to finish off, Cotton, Harvey, and Sobey are on the podium, have received the three most, are the guys that have received the most votes to this point. Who's the biggest snub?
There's two. No, well, not the one you're going to say, but I mean, Mooney was the one we were talking about for a while. John Mooney could get MVP down the stretch versus Bryce Cotton.
I was never on board.
Well,
yeah, I was never on board with the John Mooney MVP trade. Like that,
and
was
then Jock Lando.
Huge snub.
Yeah.
If you put the top three together, would you actually have him in? And who would it be over if you did?
I would. I'd have him in there over Sobey, just because I value winning so much with that.
Talk to me. Convince somebody who doesn't think that that's right.
Because, well, Sobey has had a career year and, again, deserves where he's at. Don't get me wrong, deserves 100% to be in that final three. He's been outstanding. Jock Landau has had to accept a different role because he cares about winning, and he's been a huge part. We never got to see how Melvin and I would have been without Jock Lando, but he's been an integral part and gets so much attention every time he steps onto the floor that he's not going to go out and score 25 every single game. We joked about it. We're like, he's going to average 25, 10 easily, but the NBL's too good for that. NBL's like, well, no, you're not going to do that. We're not going to make you beat us. And the problem is teams now, and especially in the last couple of months, have been like, well, we put so much emphasis into Lando, but Melbourne United is so deep, the rest of these guys are just going to beat us. So why don't we just play it straight up? And all of a sudden, like, damn, Jock beat us. Like, we saw Jock versus Mooney in Perth. They didn't double. And Jock Landau just did whatever he wanted. Like, he just went down there, got to his spot, rose up, finished it, cleaned up the boards, did his thing on the defensive end. He has been incredible this year. And, I mean, if he got treated like that in every single game, we'd be looking at leading scorer of the league, leading rebounder of the league.
I agree. And this is why, like we're talking about with most improved, I'm like, you've got to look at the numbers. You have to look at the numbers, the jump that they took last year. But you've also got to, you know, you've watched the games, right? And you've watched the season and you've got to trust what you've seen. And I think you got to do that here, like you say, with Landale as well, because of exactly, I mean, you just laid it out perfectly. He, at the start of the year, And our producer guy Neville was talking to us pre-show saying, well, when you play against Melbourne United, who do you scout for? Who's the primary guy you scout for? Is it Chris Golding? Is it Jock Landau? Like, which way are you looking? I think at the start of the season, it was Jock Landau for most teams. And that's why he was getting doubled on the catch. Good chime in from our producer, right? So he was getting doubled on the catch. kick it out without any hesitation. Kick, kick, Golding, McCarron, whoever it was on the other side of the floor, knockdown shot. Teams were getting wiped off the floor. They opened the season 6-0. I think, what were they, 9-1? And it was like, this isn't working.
Yeah.
Well, those open looks, similar to like the how Bryce Cotton helps John Mooney, those open looks for all those guys, and their offense was still very much a work in progress at that point, but that was so much of it was being created by Jock and the respect that he was being given down low. Teams, you're right, have had to make that adjustment, and now his numbers have ballooned and he's putting up 20-point games week in, week out right now.
And you've got to be a true, like, understand the game of basketball to see it, not just from what, like, when they throw it into the post, what he does. When they scout, a lot of it is to take away even his catches. But what that means is all of a sudden you've got Chris Golding in the corner who's open because they've had to overhelp on not letting Jock get the ball. So you've got to really go down and understand the game to see the impact that Jock Landau's had.
Tough for Sobey not to be in there. He is in there. We're suggesting perhaps Landau could be in there over him. His team's going to finish sixth.
That's a big thing. And again, he hasn't had too much help. They've struggled, and import changes and the inconsistencies we've seen from their Aussie contingent hasn't helped him. And he single-handedly got them there, really, over the course of the season. He's been insane. I thought there hasn't been one NBL Cup MVP, but he was mine. I thought he was just went to another level there and continued that. I just think, yeah, Jock Landau, I think we need to hype up a bit more.
Had New Zealand beat Southeast Melbourne the other night, and Brisbane, who would have maintained a high level of energy because they would have been still alive, beaten Sydney, tonight would be for Brisbane to make the finals.
Yeah.
So we say that Sobey finished sixth, but man, they were right there. Right there. It's only been a couple of days since they were eliminated. It would have been a play-in game tonight. It's tough. I mean, I you're right. He deserves all the recognition that he's receiving. So does Tyler Harvey. So does Bryce Cotton. But Jock Landau, I would imagine he finished fourth in the voting, and then John Mooney. And if that's the case, it's hard to argue too
much. Yeah, but Nathan Sobey, the most impressive thing is to me, we didn't see the emotional Nathan Sobey this year. Like, he stepped up as a leader, and we've seen in the past that he struggled. He tries to shoot his way out of it, tries to create, just does a little too much. He just locked into a zone that he was like, I'm going to do this, whether it was the boomer snub at the initial thing or what it was. And he just took everyone else along. He led by example without the emotional that we used to see where he'd be erratic or in some different instances. The fact that he did obviously get added to the Boomer squad, huge record, deserved that, but loved his year. Couldn't be more impressed with what he did this year. On that most improved list, I mean, he's not in the finalists, but that's a great nod. A guy who's gone from, he was already a star, but he went from a star to a superstar. Like, we talk about the top five players in the league, probably wasn't there before this season. Ends this season, he's definitely in that category.
Taking a great lead. Would imagine, I mean, it's pretty cool to see a guy who already won most improved earlier in his career when he took a leap from a guy coming off the bench to an all-NBL second team guy, 2016-17 with Adelaide, to a guy, you're right, who's made that jump from to become a superstar of the league.
You can only really improve like twice, can't you? You go from the bench to a good player. Oh, three times, good player, star. So you can. That's Nathan Sobey.
He's a huge reason why that's an interesting job, that head coaching job at Brisbane.
Yeah.
Now, there's been reports from ESPN's Olgan Ullich that James Duncan is the man to be stepping into that role, to be taken over a team that has an MVP caliber player under contract, has another year remaining on that deal in Brisbane, makes that. Just from a starting point, makes that a really attractive position.
Yeah, absolutely does. And again, to be able to lead a team and build a team around Nathan Sobey, and if whoever gets that job, that's the thing. He's your guy. He's now your guy. He's shown that he can do this in this league night in and night out. So it's worth saying, like, what do we need to help Nathan Sobey so that we can just go for it. Like, you don't want to have
Need Vic Law.
Yeah, oh, that's got to be the first one. You've got those two, the way they play together would be incredible. But then it's like, what pieces do we need to put around these two guys to really complement them perfectly, knowing that we're not going to bring in a Jock Landau type guy who's going to be above them, because right now we've got our two guys. If we get Vic Law, we've got our two guys. What's the next one we can slot in next to them and then rest behind to build that base?
Outstanding. There it is.
Oh, we proved it. Bryce Cotton is the MVP.
Bryce Cotton's the MVP. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Anyone who says it's not, it's, we got to stop falling into, he's like, yeah, we're expecting greatness.
Which is which is why I never bought into the John Mooney for MVP hype train.
No.
Because it's so quite clearly Bryce Cotton that I felt like that was never even a conversation for me.
But he's been so good. Interviewing Mooney, he's just so, he's such a nice bloke. Just having a chat with him. I'm really impressed with that.
So yeah. I'm not taking anything away. Well, maybe I am, but he's been awesome. But Bryce Cotton's just the best player in the league. It's such a big gap. And it's why tonight is such a, for me, is such a huge game for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix.
Yep.
Because taking on the Wildcats without Bryce Cotton is a prize very much worth fighting for.
You're not taking on Perth, are you, without Bryce? It's a whole different thing.
It's a whole different thing. And it's why I still can't get my head around why Tyler Harvey didn't play for the Hawks again that game against Sydney.
Oh, that's another Huddle podcast altogether.
All right, man, let's wrap it there. We've broken down the awards. It's great to get you on. You need to get your number plate sorted. You need to talk to the telecommunications company. Get everything sorted out and have a great call on the game tonight.
Thanks, brother. Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it. Cheers.